Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bounds. Now, it's been difficult to escape what's going on in Washington, D.C. recently as we're on the cusp of a new president who isn't being met by a full house of open arms. It's hard enough to hide from the news when you're here in London, never mind if you're in the city itself. But perhaps one place of solace is the art gallery. Today, I'm joined by the art dealer and advisor, Kathleen Fox-Davies, who's just returned from a trip to Washington, D.C. And she's going to talk us through the art scene, ducking into a few places to seek succour, as we suggested. Welcome to the programme, as ever. And Happy New Year. It's not too late.
Thank you very much. You as well.
So this was a good trip. You ducked in and ducked out before inauguration.
Before it got absolutely crazy. Yes.
We're going to look equally, I think, at some of the buildings, some of the places that are displaying the art and the art on the walls themselves. But we're going to kick off, Kathleen, as you suggested, with the National Museum of African American History. Now, this is a wonderful place. This is an exciting building, a wonderful idea for it to exist, all the rest of it. Talk us through this.
This is an amazing landmark that is the newest and perhaps the last building to be added to the mall, which basically is a space telling the history of America. And finally, there is a National Museum of African American History and Culture. The building is just as important as the actual contents and the story that's being told, because the building was designed to speak to the contents. And it has been designed as to be a monument both to the African American contribution, but also a monument for the understanding of the African American contribution. And it's just incredible. It will be, hopefully, seen globally as the way the Eiffel Tower would be, or the Gherkin in London. It'll be a new icon that represents America.
There's something really interesting about the building as monument, building as artifact, building as artwork in itself. Are we in that realm, Kathleen, do you think, with this one?
We definitely are. This building it's a genius work of art. You approach the building, and because it is clad in this incredible bronze lattice work, it undulates, it changes depending on whether it's a cloudy day, it's quite dark and foreboding. If it's a sunny day, it'll actually glow gold. Mm. It is situated to where it is next to the National Monument, and it is a 10-minute walk from the White House. It has views of the Capitol building and the Jefferson Memorial, the Lincoln Memorial. It's rightfully got an amazing place among the greats of American history.
It's kind of like there was a plinth, you know, ready and spare, and ready to kind of work out when all the sort of mathematics had been done and
exactly.
The foundations had been laid, right?
Well, what's actually quite amazing is in the research for this space and the location it was going to be set on, they actually discovered that the site where the museum is now placed was the site of a slave market back when slavery defined not only the District of Columbia but the entire economy of the United States. And so it's very poignant. It is both a memorial and a monument.
Yeah, some sort of serendipitous sort of psychogeography at work there as well. Fascinating stuff. We should say that this amazing building has been designed by David Adjaye and Philip Freelon. We've talked about the outside. What about the inside, Kathleen? What's inside?
Well, you walk into this incredible building that's light-filled and just spacious, and it's meant to be about light and uplifting. And you see that with the way the building's designed. But what you don't realize until you enter that building is the majority of the space is actually underground. So you are taken 70 feet underground via an elevator or lift, and you open up into the 1400s, which is the beginning of the story of the African slave trade and the foundations of America. Fast forwarding into 1619, the first slave entrance into the United States, before it was the United States. And you actually rise up through the building, but through history, through the dark and horrible stages, but also some quite uplifting and humanizing moments. And you end back at ground level with the Obama era and his inauguration. And it's quite an incredible community that's there going through this journey with you. And it's tough, and you've got families there with their children, and everyone's experiencing these displays and the story in very, very different ways. But you end with Obama, and it's happy, and their people are smiling and cheering and getting their picture taken and remembering moments and where they were. And then you go into the upper levels. They're 5 stories above ground in those 3 tiers that you can see. And that's where we start to see the modern contributions of African-American culture to the concept of American identity. So you've got sports, music, military contributions, also you have things as, such as the Black Lives Matter movement and a lot of the sociopolitical issues that are dominating the headlines today. And it's a story that will continue to change and will continue to be added to.
One of these things, it's really subtle. The curatorship and, in fact, the design, the exhibition design is, and as much as the exhibitions and the artefacts themselves, it's such a sensitive thing. It's such a thing to get right. Looking at it, it kind of reminded me of a museum of memory. And I guess that's what it is.
It actually is. And how that museum actually got its collection is part of that.
Yeah.
It's a museum that was founded before there was a single item in its collection. So they had sort of an antiques roadshow, for lack of a better word, in 15 cities in the United States, inviting people to bring whatever historical objects they might have in. And they now have something like 40,000 objects that have been donated by everyone that is collectively telling this story. So the curation of the building, the concept of the building started before they actually ever knew what they were going to house within it, which it's a bit of a genius move.
So this kind of sounds like the must-see.
It's the must-see.
This is the must-see in Washington, D.C.
This is probably...
This year or any year.
I'd say this year or any year, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking us through the National Museum of African American History. Look at the outside, marvel at the inside as well. We're going to go to the National Portrait Gallery now. Kathleen, this is the evergreen Bill Viola. What's he up to at the Portrait Gallery?
Well, this is the National Portrait Gallery's very first exhibition that's been devoted solely to media art. Mm-hmm. And who better to dedicate that to than Bill Viola with his show, The Moving Portrait. It consists of 11 media pieces in their brand new media space that will be a permanent space housed within this building that is... It's there to tell the story of America through the people that have contributed to that story. And this is quite a cool way of looking at it because Bill Viola is not actually looking at famous faces or names, but he's looking more at the human condition and the experience of who we are and how we got to where we are through these 11 pieces. It's the works included span his entire career, 1970 to present. Some focus on self-portraiture, which he's well known for, and others are these huge productions, which also are incredible to behold. They confront you, and it's about sound and the visuals that are larger than life around you. And it is quite a strange show to confront after coming through these quite hallowed halls with paintings of you know, men in powdered wigs and everything else.
Yeah, there's always I'm always intrigued by the atmosphere in a room when there's a Bill Viola show on. There's the people are spellbound. People, there's that very kind of purposeful way in which he makes paintings where the eyes follow you around the room, but so does the rest of the work, right?
Well, it was a quite incredible show because the way it's been curated, it's almost a pass-through. The entire building, it links itself, so you'll end up back where you started. And so you have a lot of people that came solely to see the Bill Viola show that appreciate and know contemporary art and follow this genre and this artist. And then you've got some people that never would have ever thought to visit a contemporary show of this nature, that you find them looking quite confused at where they've shown up. But by the time they've made this journey through the media rooms, they might have a different idea of the experience. But the works are incredible. I think two that really caught my eye. One is called The Raft, and it's men and women of varying ages and backgrounds and socioeconomic statuses standing. It's almost like they're standing at a bus stop along a curb. You don't really know why they're there. But all of a sudden, there's a flood. It's like someone has taken a police fire hose to them. And it's called The Raft, which makes you think that there's going to be some sort of savior, something that's going to save them from this. But all of a sudden, these people that were never interacting because of this apocalyptical occurrence that's happening, catastrophic occurrence, they're holding on to each other. And, you know, this thing lasts 10, 11, 12 minutes of just absolute dumping on these people as they're trying to survive. And it really does speak to the human condition, which I found it a very powerful work. And you did see the visitors to this show stopping and spending time and watching this as it cycled through again and again, just absolutely amazed and appalled and probably equal measure with the work.
Yeah, and also for every raft that saves you, there's Jericho, there's the raft of Medusa.
That sings you.
Not everything.
Exactly.
Not everything ends
exactly.
ends so well.
Exactly.
Okay, so Bill Viola at the National Portrait Gallery, and we should also say, by the way, that he is that show is on until May 7th. But before the end of the show, we'll update you and tell you what's going on at all the shows that are on at the National Museum of African American History and when they're on as well. Your final choice, Kathleen, is Hadia Javanshir Ilchi at the Hemp Hill Gallery. This is a really interesting show you've needled out for us here. How did you find out about her work?
Well, Washington, D.C. is a very strange place. It is a city that is so steeped in culture, but most of it is institutionalized or academic. So go to the mall, go to the Smithsonian, go to the National Portrait Gallery, but you don't see a lot of independent galleries that are thriving and showing work that is amazing, to
yeah.
be honest.
Okay.
Once people sort of
it ends up somewhere
yeah,
else.
DC is a hard nut to crack, and, yeah. and once you do, you sort of it's the get thee to New York syndrome. So DC is sort of this wasteland where there are a few shining gems, and Hemp Hill Gallery is one of those. It's been there for I think about 30 years, and they are consistently showing quite amazing work. Now, this is an artist that lives in DC, also has representation in New York and internationally, but has stuck to her roots. And to the Hemp Hill Gallery. This is the very first show that she has had with this gallery, and it's just incredible. It's 26 paintings, one sculptural work. Hadia is exploring her dual identities as an Iranian-born woman now living in the United States. And you see her struggling and exploring this notion of duality through all of these pieces, some to greater success than others, but all of them incredibly powerful.
Very striking.
They are incredibly striking.
Yeah.
She works quite large scale, also very, very small intricate pieces as well. So you're constantly being confronted and having to move away or move forward to engage in the works. And there's also this notion of the East meets West in her practice. She is an abstract painter. So it's the movement painting. It's the throwing of the paint onto Mylar and watching it move around without really her help. It's an organic process. And she then reapproaches that painting once it's dried and adds detailed, intricate paintwork.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because seeing the pictures online, I wanted to ask you about that, the sense of how thick is the paint on the canvas, because I feel like the flourish, the act of putting the paint on the canvas is saying as much. Maybe not as much, but it is certainly saying something as much as the subject.
Well, it's an action, whether it be a forceful anger or passionate throwing of paint. You get the read of, you'll have to read that yourself into each piece, but it's got fissures and glops and some bits where the paint hasn't mixed properly and it's almost like it's got gravel within the pigment. And she then cuts the Mylar out in some places and layers thrown paint over thrown paint over thrown paint. And then with her detailed work, braids those and weaves them back in to tell a complete story. And the detailed work is actually her heritage. It's that it's the Persian tradition of Tazib. So it's the art of illumination. It's what you would traditionally see in manuscripts, you know, beautiful gold and blues and reds, oftentimes evoking imagery that you would think of from her Persian roots. So gates and cypress trees. And there's this wonderful, colorful snaking that follows through a lot of the work. She calls it an energy. They look like prayer beads.
Right.
But you get what you want out of it. But all of it is approaching this idea of her being female, her being Iranian female, her being American female, her being an Iranian American, and the constant conflict that those identities bring to her.
Yeah, I love where a little bit of figurative, a tree, or for example, a bridge, kind of pops out of that big wash of abstraction. I think they're kind of affecting. And then, as we said before we started doing the actual interview, there are these funny little slightly irritating bits of hyper detail which you think, I wouldn't have put that in there. But what do I know, Kathleen? Absolutely nothing.
They work.
Exactly. It's wonderful stuff, as are all three. That is Hadia Javanshir Ilchi at the Hemp Hill Gallery, and that show is on until the 19th. The squeal of brakes as you try to turn up in time for that one will be deafening. The National Portrait Gallery, of course, was showing Bill Viola. His show is on until May 7th. And the very various wonderful works that are on at the National Museum of African American History comes none more highly recommended by Kathleen. So my thanks to my guest, Kathleen Fox-Davis, for taking us on a tour through Washington, D.C. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bounds. The show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when I'll be mulling over the week's album releases with Will Hodgkinson. But for the time being, for me, Robert Bounds, thanks for tuning in.